Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good.
What if I could tell you exactly what you needed to do to lead a culture change effectively? Culture can be a complex thing. And for those who are new here, I'm Heather, and my team and I create customized training and leadership development for nonprofits. In addition to working inside a national nonprofit, among many other organizations, and experiencing workplaces that were strong and others that were challenging, I'm also currently building a team at Skillmasters Market. And as I build this team, one of the things I continue to ask myself is, what do I want the culture of the team to be? I know it's easier to start in the way that you want to go than to change your path later. And with my experience in talent management, I know workplace culture is a huge part of the employee experience. According to Gallup's website, only 2 in 10 US employees feel connected to their organization's culture. Yet culture is what allows you to attract, retain, and develop your staff. And it helps create a more productive workforce, which means the people you serve in your nonprofit feel the impact. Your mission depends on it. And that's why I'm so excited to have Rebecca Marchafavitz on Learning for Good today to discuss culture change and to help you successfully lead or navigate that change. Rebecca's professional experience of nearly 2 decades spans the fields of public education, public policy, health promotion, and organizational leadership. As a nonprofit leader at STAR, that's Sexual Trauma Awareness and Response, she discovered her passion for developing work cultures that promote health, prevent harm, and allow people to do their best work. Rebecca is the founder of Culture Work LLC, where she consults with organizations to develop healthy environments and improve well-being at work. An experienced speaker, facilitator, and consultant, Rebecca is passionate about building workplaces that are engines of health and well-being. She is motivated by collaborations with curious, courageous leaders at all levels who are invested in the challenging but rewarding work of developing healthier approaches to work. Rebecca is going to bring a unique perspective to the show, so I'm happy she is here. Rebecca, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I know you have a bit of a trauma-informed perspective. You're all about really looking at the systems, but keeping the people front and center. Before we dive in, though, to your approach to culture change, let's get to know you a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your career journey. How did you get where you are today?
Sure. So it's been an interesting route, but I did start out professionally working in the field of public education. So after college, I was a 5th grade teacher and I later worked in school operations. I actually managed student information systems for a small school system and trained staff on how to implement those systems. And I later went on to get my master's in education policy. So at the beginning of my professional life, I was really invested in the field of public education and that work. And yet after getting my master's, spending 2 years in grad school studying policy and getting more familiar with policy work, I realized that I wanted to be closer to the ground. I really enjoyed working at the ground level of organizations and working with people and communities. And I even for my master's thesis, I wrote about the principal agent problem, where we have policy making that is very divorced from the experiences of those frontline staff that are doing the work. So that was always something I was really interested in as an issue. And yet after grad school, I ended up taking a job as a community educator for a small nonprofit in my hometown of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And this nonprofit was a sexual assault center. So I was dove headfirst into trauma work. I was hired as community educator. So the focus was on raising awareness and prevention. But at the same time, we were a small organization and I was doing a lot of the crisis response work as well. So answering hotlines, going to the hospital, and it was just a major education on a lot of levels. And so when I took that job, I thought, okay, I'll be here for a couple of years and then move on because it's a small nonprofit. There's not really much room for growth or advancement. But the organization actually, I joined at a time when it was really primed for expansion and growth. And we ended up growing a lot over the decade plus that I ended up being with the organization. So I started out as community educator. I then became prevention director, was passionate about prevention at multiple levels. And then I accepted the role of vice president to continue support the organization's development. So as vice president, I was managing a lot of things, HR related, staff training related, operations, you name it. It was a lot to handle, but it was a really great education in and of itself. So that was really where I discovered my passion for kind of taking this harm prevention and violence prevention mindset and merging that with organizational and nonprofit leadership and saying, how do we combine these things? And as nonprofits, we are here to help create healthier people and communities. How can we make sure that we are doing that internally in our own operations and within our own culture? So yeah, that was how I ended up doing this work that I'm doing. I also, in my last couple of years at STAR, was fortunate enough to be able to begin consulting with external institutions and other nonprofits and companies around this area of developing and maintaining safer and healthier environments. So that's what led me to ultimately launch Culture Work and to be able to continue to build on that work in a more focused way.
Yeah, I love that because everybody's career journey is so unique and it always informs how we do our work later. Wherever we end up, whatever we end up doing in the phase that we're in, there are things that we've picked up along the way that make it unique to us. And so I love that you're taking that harm prevention, violence prevention learning and applying it within the culture work that you're doing. So there's been a lot of talk about culture for a long time in the nonprofit space. And I think just generally in the talent management space, we see workplace culture coming up time and time again. There's also been a newer push for well-being in the workplace. And so it sounds like the time is really ripe for what you focus on. So for the nonprofits who are listening to this episode, how would they know if they need to change their workplace culture? What is that pain point or that thing that is cropping up for them that would make them say, wow, I need this?
Well, first, I want to say that I love what you said in your introduction about, even from your own perspective, approaching this and saying, you know that it's easier to basically prevent culture issues than it is to fix or correct them. So I think, first of all, culture is something that it's important to be on everyone's mind, even if you're not experiencing those kind of critical pain points, because a lot of things, even one new person joining our team can change the culture in positive ways and negative ways. So it's always important to just, I think, being thinking about culture, being mindful of it, and even consistently assessing it, even if you feel like things are going well. So that's just, again, from that prevention standpoint, that's always what I want to recommend for organizations. But in terms of what are the signs that there are culture issues, what are some things that are coming up that would be indicators that it's maybe more of a critical issue to examine and address? I would say a major one is breakdowns in trust, communication, and collaboration. So we can see this in a variety of ways. But I think a really common one is when you see us versus them attitudes developing within an organization. So that could be within a team, that could be between teams, that could be between frontline staff and leadership. But anytime there's kind of these breakdowns that are getting in the way of effective communication and collaboration, and that are we typically see associated with breakdowns in trust, that's a really big one. And I think also when we're talking about culture, it's important to recognize that power dynamics are a big issue when we're looking at defining culture. And how this plays out in organizations is if organizations really intentionally work to, as much as possible, kind of minimize power imbalances, what that does is it empowers everyone to contribute, to speak up, to trust that their voices will be heard and that they matter within the organization. So if staff fear making mistakes, if staff fear giving open and honest feedback or identifying issues that may need to be resolved, that's another major issue. So honestly, if everyone seems like they're getting along great all the time and there's never any disagreement, even though that might feel good on the surface, I would say that's actually an indicator that there are some culture issues, because people who do disagree probably don't feel safe to disagree or feel like that would be something that is okay to do. But it's really important when we're working together that we can disagree, that we can engage in productive conflict with one another. And that really drives our best work and great collaboration. So those are some things. And then I would also say, which can be very common in the nonprofit space, is when high stress is just the norm, things are always urgent, everything's always stressful, you know, that's if we are there to provide services to clients in the community, there's still, it's really important to manage stress. And that connects back to that connection between well-being and culture, health and culture. And then I would say too, if leaders are spending way more time putting out fires than being able to focus on proactive leadership, that would be another big sign. So I know that might be a lot to take in, but those are some of the key things that come up. Putting out fires, spending tons of time trying to resolve ongoing toxic conflict as opposed to productive conflict, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So in addition to people who are listening who might want to be on the proactive end and be preventing an issue coming up in culture, those who might be right currently in a situation where they need to be more reactive, they should be looking for the breakdown of trust, communication, and collaboration, as you mentioned, power imbalances that might exist, the high stress being the norm, which it does happen, right, in nonprofit spaces, and then not being able to focus on proactive leadership as kind of some of those signs and symptoms that there might be a need for a culture change. I love that you brought up trust. We're going to probably revisit that, I would assume, in within our conversation today. I talk a lot about trust, which might sound weird for someone focused on the learning and development, leadership development space, but I talk a lot about trust. So I'm sure that will come up again. So let's say a nonprofit says, that's me, they raise their hand, that's me, I need to work on organizational culture, I'm in. What challenges might they face as they're trying to create that culture change?
Sure. So I think a big challenge is that nonprofits are not always incentivized to work on culture. So when we think about what are nonprofits being funded to do, it's usually focused on those direct services. It's not so much focused on building a healthy internal culture. So one of the things I like to talk about is how these things go together and how when we really focus on building a healthy culture internally, it creates more consistency and stability for our client services and community services as well. But I think that's a big one, right? Is it's not necessarily something that nonprofits are expected to do, funded to do, and given the resources to do. So being under-resourced in this area is a big challenge. And I think too, there's a culture that is not in any way just within individual nonprofits, but within the system overall that tells nonprofits that they need to do the absolute most with the absolute fewest resources. And I think this really contributes to a broad culture and mindset that we need to constantly self-sacrifice. We need to, you know, be everything to everybody. And so I think there are a lot of tensions at play. There's a lot of cultural norms within the nonprofit system that really need to be interrogated and shifted to open up new possibilities for, again, being able to have healthy workforces within the nonprofit space that are able to do good and meaningful work without sacrificing their health.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Rebecca, I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this, you'll be excited, I'm sure, if you have seen this. I have seen a couple of organizations, either I've heard them talking about it or I've seen the job postings where they're hiring mental health specialists who focus on their staff. So they are not just focused on the people they're serving, but really focused on how do we build the capacity of our staff and make sure that they are in a good place, they're healthy, their well-being is taken care of, and those kinds of things. Have you seen that?
So I haven't seen that specifically. Talking about my work at STAR and being a sexual assault center, we had mental health professionals on staff because these were the services we provided in addition to other services. But we really tried to engage a lot of the expertise of our counselors and social workers to allow that to inform the space. And that's really when I talk about my trauma-informed approach, it comes from my experience as a victim advocate, my experience working in an organization that was doing trauma work and crisis work. But I will say, even with organizations where you don't necessarily think trauma or things like that are a major issue, anyone who's doing any type of public service work, any system that is doing public service work, there is a lot of need for staff support to be able to maintain boundaries, to be able to prevent burnout, to mitigate vicarious trauma that may be experienced. So I do love to hear that. And I think even for organizations that can't necessarily afford that, there are so many things that organizations can put into practice to support staff and support them, their well-being, their health, while doing such important work.
Yeah, I just thought you would appreciate it. I've seen that, and it made me think about all the opportunities that could be out there. Like you said, not everybody can afford to bring somebody on staff, but is there a partner that you could collaborate with that could bring some of that expertise and that kind of thing?
Definitely.
So tell me though, we're talking about culture change specifically, and my audience is generally nonprofit learning and development leaders. So a lot of times when there is something that needs to happen in the organization, training is tapped. And we can argue all day about whether training is the right solution, certainly not the only solution. But if that's the case, learning and development will be tapped. So how can learning and development help support a culture change?
Yeah, I think it plays a big role. And I know we had emailed about this, and I'm also one of the first to say, let's talk about what besides training is needed. But when we're thinking about culture change, one example that comes to mind for me is manager training. So a lot of times, and we see this in many fields, not just in the nonprofit field, a lot of times people are promoted into management positions without necessarily being provided effective training on what does it not just mean to be a good manager in general, but within the organization in particular, what are the expectations for managers? How are managers expected to support their teams, to engage their teams, to achieve what they need to achieve? So I think when it comes to culture, yes, leaders really set the tone. Leaders really set the culture. But managers are in such a powerful position to impact frontline staff's day-to-day work and experience in the organization. So to me, thinking about learning and development, manager training is a big one. And just any training when we're looking at, okay, there's a certain culture change that this organization wants to make, or there's a certain or there's just a certain culture that we want to make sure people are aware of as they're being hired and onboarded. What are the ways that training fits into that in terms of building skills and knowledge? And also fostering connections. I think there's so much in terms of when we create these learning experiences, there's so much room for facilitating connection and really setting a tone in trainings and things like that, that help demonstrate what the culture of the organization is and can be.
Yeah, I love that you brought up fostering connections. And I 100% agree on manager training, even identifying the competencies that you want managers to have, and then building the training to really make sure that you're developing those specific competencies in your managers is huge. But the fostering connections thing really resonates with me because I do talk a lot about trust in training. And anytime you're bringing people together in a especially synchronous environment where they're together at the same time, you have the ability to build relationships, often cross-functionally, and you have the ability to establish trust. And trust is needed for training to be successful too, not just organizational culture change. So really thinking about what are the trainings that could be helpful in creating that culture change, and how do we actually design those trainings to help build that trust, build the communication skills, and encourage the collaboration that you mentioned were breakdowns, potential sign of needing the culture change in the first place. And it's probably a whole other episode, but really excited that you brought that up. Now, often people go to training regardless of whether that is the right solution. And I will be the first to say that training is not always the right solution. So we heard how L&D, learning and development, can help support a culture change. What are some of the limitations of learning and development when it comes to a culture change initiative?
Sure. So yeah, I absolutely think that training is often identified by leadership as the silver bullet for addressing certain issues, when really it's going to require more than just training to address things. So, and I think this ties back into one way to not accomplish culture change is to approach it from a compliance-based mindset. And so when, let's say, an organization's leadership is viewing learning and development or training as, okay, we provided this training to fix this issue, check, we're done, that's not going to be sufficient to achieving whatever change is really needed or strategically achieving a goal. So I think, and I feel for training coordinators and learning and development professionals who these issues are delegated to them and they're expected to fix it, but really training is either not the answer or not the only part of the answer, not the only part of the puzzle that needs to be in place to be effective. So yeah, I think that would be the biggest thing, is validating whatever experiences learning and development professionals have had that align with that, and then also encouraging leaders to think beyond training, think more holistically about approaches to resolving issues related to workplace culture.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so for listeners who are in learning and development and they're looking to really partner with others in the organization to bring culture change, or for those who are working more broadly in the talent management space, what are the tips that you would give to really help them prepare to lead a culture change or navigate a change that they're in within their nonprofit so they can be successful? So at the end of the day, we know culture change is hard. So what are the tips that they can take away to really achieve success?
Yeah, I think first, breaking out of the compliance mindset. We might need systems and checklists and things, but the biggest thing that I can say is assess the situation. I think a lot of times leaders feel like there is a major issue and just action needs to be taken. And maybe that's the case, but I really advocate taking the time to assess the situation, whether that is an internal assessment, bringing when there's been breakdowns in trust. I think it can be helpful to bring in an external consultant or somebody who can, that people may feel more comfortable speaking with, but just taking the time to assess and recognizing that data, it's not just about quantitative data, and it's not just about what we as leaders think or see. So being open to perspectives that differ from ours, challenging our own internal defensiveness that may come up as leaders. Oh, we're working so hard, we're giving so much, and people are quote unquote complaining, right? But if we're fostering a culture of we are all important to achieving a mission, we are all valuable, we are all deserving of respect, in our day-to-day work, then that does mean setting a precedent for we're going to be assessing issues and also what's going well. What is the organization doing well and what are areas for improvement? And kind of in doing that on an ongoing basis, I really highly recommend to inform whatever actions that you take as leaders. So even if there's that feeling of rushing in to take action, taking that beat, taking that pause, assessing the situation, and then deciding how to act. And then I would say, even in that process, obviously you want to be doing something. You don't want to just wait, okay, we can't do anything. The little things matter so much. And so what I would say, going back to your, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, but this concept of building trust is built through our daily interactions and the really little things. Trust is built when I send you an email and I get a response, even just an acknowledgement, even if you can't do the thing that I need done or that I'm asking to be done. You acknowledge me as a person and say, who's going to follow up or connect me with the person I need to. Even something as seemingly simple as that builds trust in a major way. Following through on what you say you're going to do as a leader, being careful to not overpromise, to be clear about what you can or cannot do, being clear about what people can expect from you, what they can't expect. All of that is really important because even if it's not what they want to hear, if you are saying something and you follow through on that, that builds trust. So I really want to make sure people are not thinking that I'm saying be full-fledged people pleasers to try to do everything for everyone. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. Be careful about what you say you're going to do and then follow through on it. If circumstances change, communicate about that. So just making sure that there's a culture of responsiveness within reason and acknowledgement of people and their needs, staff members and their needs, and following through on what you say you're going to do. And then I would also say prioritize your well-being, because leader well-being has a big impact on organizational culture. And if leaders are struggling with burnout, if they are constantly overwhelmed, constantly stressed, that's actually not good for the organization. And so figuring out how to balance your responsibilities with also the ability and the understanding that it's okay to set boundaries and it's okay to get really clear on what your core responsibilities are, I would just say leader well-being is really important. And again, this goes back to, I think leaders are expected to self-sacrifice so much, but that's actually not good for the culture. And it's not a great model for other staff members and employees. So yeah, those are some things that come to mind for that question.
Yeah, those are great. And I love that you brought up prioritizing your own well-being as part of that as well. I actually have a couple of podcast episodes focused on well-being and different takes on how to prioritize your own well-being. So I'll link to those in the show notes for anybody who that was resonating with them, I'm sure, as you were talking. All right, Rebecca, any final words for listeners?
I just thank you for showing up for this conversation. And I am such a culture nerd. I've really enjoyed getting to talk with you, Heather, about this. So again, I just appreciate you having me on. And as for listeners, I would just say, get curious about your culture, really think about it and what's working and what's not. And if you're in a position to do it, I would say as a leader, if you're not already, I recommend taking steps to assessing the culture and working on the things that aren't working for your staff and for yourself.
I love that. Get curious about your culture. All right, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your approach to culture change.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Now, I know that you may be grappling with culture change right now, or you may have experienced it in the past, either in your current organization or a previous organization, because it's so common to have some culture issues, right? Some culture things that you need to change or want to change. So I'd love to hear from you. What tips would you offer to someone who is navigating a culture change? Head on over to the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective and share with us. It's a free virtual community for nonprofit, talent management, DEI, and L&D leaders to come together and solve some of their most pressing challenges virtually in a way that's quick and easy. So I'd love to see you there. And I'd love to hear your tips for culture change. And if you're looking for support in revamping your learning and development programs, such as maybe defining those manager competencies that you need, or creating manager training to better support your culture, head over to my website and let's work together so you get the exact solutions you need to achieve your organization's staff development goals. I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.
Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice, share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.